Our next case is 13-0096, City of Cleveland versus Aaron McCardle and Latrice Tolles. For the appellant, Mr. Nathanson.
Thank you, Chief Justice, fellow justices. With the court's permission, I would like to yield 3 minutes to Mr. Peterson from the state of Ohio, and then reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, Your Honors, there is no constitutional right to have 24-hour access to a city park or other city property. Yet the 8th District's decision in this case, holding that the City of Cleveland's ordinance is constitutional, effectively does that. It invalidates the viability of firmly rooted time, place, and manner restrictions, which is in contravention of well-established First Amendment jurisprudence. The 8th District's decision is flawed in three primary ways. First, it ignored the many significant government interests that the City of Cleveland asserted were present through the enactment and enforcement of its ordinance, and those types of interests have been upheld as constitutional many times throughout the precedent. Second, the 8th District held that the interests were not, the enactment of those, the ordinance and the enforcement of the interests were not narrowly tailored to the restriction that the ordinance had. Primarily, they state this because they believe that it failed a least restrictive means test, even though the U.S. Supreme Court in Ward versus Rock Against Racism had abolished the least restrictive means test in the 80s. Yet the 8th District.
Counsel, it seems to me that what was being argued below is that the city needed to get into that quadrant of public square so that they could clean it.
That is one benefit to having a curfew and a permit requirement through this ordinance, Your Honor.
But the Court of Appeals didn't buy that. They thought that that was maybe a little more restrictive than it needed to be. Can you tell me why people have to stop their protests so you can go in and rake leaves?
It's not that they have to stop their protest. If they had applied for the permit and had been there pursuant to a duly authorized permit from the city would not have scheduled a cleanup of the park at that time. That's one of the benefits of having the permit requirement, is so that it can schedule those things. That's one of the interests that the 8th District focused on, but that's not the only interest at stake through the city's ordinance.
Are you saying it's before this court now that if they had applied for a permit, it would have been granted and there would have been no cleanup required by the city?
The same group that the defendants in this case were a part of on that evening had applied for permits and had been granted permits from the city for a period of about 2 weeks in the middle of that month, October 2011, but it was for different areas. So they had been granted permits for the other areas. So if they had applied for a permit for this night for this area, I don't see any reason why they would not have been granted the permit also.
What was that area?
In Public Square, there are different quadrants in Public Square, which is at the intersection of Ontario and Superior Avenue in downtown Cleveland. The quadrant that they were the defendant appellees were arrested on is the northwest quadrant, which is also known as the Tom Johnson quadrant. It's the only quadrant that has an actual lawn. The other ones are paved and brick, but this one has an actual park on it. And this is where they were protesting on that particular evening.
But where were they granted permission to stay?
That the group that had applied for a permit had been granted permits for the, I believe it was the southwest quadrant, which is the brick courtyard in front of Tower City, across the street.
Right. Not as comfortable to pitch your tent on. Probably couldn't pitch a tent on pavement, right?
I suppose
there
are.
Were there tents involved here or not? This was a spinoff from the Occupy Wall Street, or a copycat of that.
Correct, Your Honor. There, on that particular evening, they had not had any tents erected.
So it was just
quadrant
human beings.
Correct. They were just standing there, and when the officers approached at 10 p.m. and told them that the curfew was in effect at 10 p.m. and they needed to leave, they refused to leave. And
your brief, or the state's brief, somebody's brief, says, well, they could have just gone up by the terminal tower and stood on the sidewalk, that the sidewalks are exempt.
That's correct. The ordinance itself exempts the surrounding city streets and adjacent sidewalks. So they wouldn't have had to walk even to Tower City.
Are there other ordinances that would prohibit them from protesting? Or it seems to me one of the I think your brief suggests, well, there are other opportunities, but if it's a slow news night in Cleveland, the TV news comes on 11 o'clock, not at 9 o'clock. So the hour of 10 o'clock really knocks them out of getting on camera and making their arguments to the rest of the world.
I don't believe that that was thought about when the ordinance was enacted and they thought 10 o'clock.
Well, what was thought about?
In 2007,
seems to not
be
in the record, right?
It's not in the record in the sense that we did not put on any factual witnesses to describe why the ordinance was enacted in 2007 and
keep people from sleeping in the public square?
That's why it was enacted originally, was to address the situation of homeless people sleeping on public square. So they came up with the 10 p.m. curfew. In regards to the question about moving to the sidewalk.
So all this business about cleaning and public safety and all of that, it's really an anti-vagrant ordinance.
The purpose of the ordinance is to preserve the condition of the park so that it's not damaged. They were running into situations in 2007 where damage.
You just said it's to keep people from having to see the unpleasantness of homeless folks sleeping on the public square.
I don't believe that that's one of the interests that the city has in enacting the ordinance. It's not.
I thought that's what you just said.
It's in order to make sure that the park is not damaged is the reason why they enacted the ordinance and said that there needs to be a permit.
Isn't that a problem when we're talking about freedom of speech? It sounds to me like you're saying that the ordinance is going to be or has been enforced so that you can have all the freedom of speech you want over on the pavement on the southwest corner of the square, but none on the northwest portion of the square. Where is the compelling interest for the city of Cleveland to designate which quadrant people may exercise their constitutional rights?
A compelling state interest isn't required under intermediate scrutiny. A compelling state interest is not required under intermediate scrutiny. The only thing that's required is that the ordinance is content neutral and that there are substantial government interests that are narrowly tailored. It's narrowly tailored to advance those interests.
And that's specifically what I'm asking you. What is the governmental interest that is narrowly tailored saying you can have freedom of speech on the southwest quadrant, but no freedom of speech on the northwest quadrant?
The southwest quadrant isn't exempted in the statute. There's the same curfew as in existence in the northwest and southwest quadrants. It's the city streets and adjacent sidewalks that are exempted. So if the defendants' appellees had applied for a permit for where they were arrested, they wouldn't have been arrested. They wouldn't have been arrested at all.
If they had a permit, how long could they have stayed there?
They could have stayed there all night.
All night.
Yes.
The problem here is that they didn't apply for a permit. Previously, there was a permit granted for another quadrant because presumably that's the quadrant they asked for permission to sit on or stand on or stay 24
Correct.
Hours.
That's
right?
That's the quadrant they applied for on those other occasions.
Okay, they wanted that one at that point, and then we have another group of people who may not have realized that they need a permit or they were not familiar with the system, but they show up on the catty corner on the quadrant and refuse to leave. Correct?
It was the same group that had applied for the permit in the other location.
So they knew that there's a permit process and they were granted a permit previously, but
Correct.
They decided not to go for the permit this time and just go to the quadrant and violate the law.
That's correct. My understanding is that they wanted to get arrested for media attention, and that's why they did not apply for a permit.
And is that testimony in the record?
It's not in the record, but that was part of the investigation that the city of Cleveland did after the arrest.
Was this in any way content-related or content-based, the regulation you're talking about here?
No, Your Honor. It's in no way content-neutral. The criteria set forth in the ordinance for granting or denying a permit are substantially similar to other ordinances in other cases, such as Thomas v. Chicago Park District and also Parks v. Finan, where the court there said that they are not content-based. They're content-neutral, and intermediate scrutiny applies. So there's no thought into what is the expressive message of any particular applicant when determining whether or not it should be granted or denied.
Could I ask a question? When are there bathroom facilities on the square?
No.
All right. When they were given permission on the southeast quadrant to be there, I mean
southwest.
What are we talking about here? What quadrant? The north.
They were arrested on the northwest.
Northwest. Quadrant. Previously, they were on the southwest with
Correct.
A permit. Were facilities put up for their use?
No. They did not. I don't believe that they asked the city to provide public restroom access.
Okay.
But people can go into Tower City, which is where the public transportation hub is, and there are public restrooms
Council,
in there.
It all seems a little odd. Not focused on these clients. It seems like what you said earlier, unless I misunderstood you, that the council just didn't want homeless or vagrants sleeping on the lawn in downtown Cleveland in its most public place, because there's stuff going on pretty late at night on the public square, right?
No. After late at night, there's really not much, if anything, going on downtown, which is why there aren't
people traversing the area of the public square at night.
Not many.
It seems like a strange place to have a curfew.
The reason that the curfew was imposed is because it was highlighted in the fact that homeless people were sleeping there, causing a lot of damage to the property. So that's why the ordinance says it's prohibited to remain there, not to sleep there or camp there or set up some type of residence there. It's remaining there. So the people who enacted, the city council wanted to make sure that it's not limited to just homeless people sleeping there, but that it's broader than that. So people that are there for too long during the prohibited hours can cause damage to the property.
Well, they could have accomplished the same thing and said, but if you're there to exercise, to give a speech or whatever, there.
Well, that type of exemption in the ordinance would then turn it into a content-based restriction, which would be subject to strict scrutiny, which is a very hard burden to meet.
Council, can we talk about the overbreadth argument for a second?
Yes, Your Honor.
The permit conditions prohibit all activity between 10 p.m. and 5 p.m. It applies to any group of people, or even a single person.
Correct.
And it also requires an application 10 days prior to the event. So can you address the argument that your friends on the other side make that it's overbroad, that you can accomplish all of the things that you intend, that the city intends to accomplish by making it much more narrow than it is? For example, and if you could address this specifically, it prohibits spontaneous speech. So how would you address the overbreadth argument of the permit and specifically the 10-day requirement?
In regards to the defendant's appellee's brief, in regards to if someone just happens to stop there during the night to do spontaneous speech or to do any type of activity, that would be a violation of the ordinance, because anyone who remains in the park can potentially cause damage to the park or
what would also be a violation because you didn't give 10 days notice, right?
You didn't apply for a permit within 10 days of that
right.
of that happening. Yes, that is a violation of the ordinance. But there are signs posted around all the entrances stating that there is the curfew and that subject to this particular ordinance. I don't believe that it's necessarily overbroad or that it restricts substantially more speech than is necessary to advance the city's significant interests. All of the well-established precedent in this case has similar ordinances.
Do they have 10-day requirements? How do the other cases compare in terms of the notice requirement?
I don't know what the time frame is on the other cases, but even spontaneous speech in the other cases, such as Clark versus Community for Creative Nonviolence, which took place in Washington, D.C. on the National Mall, that particular regulation, there was the potential that spontaneous speech might incidentally be impacted through the enactment of that ordinance, but the Supreme Court upheld that ordinance, stating that maintaining the parks in an intact and attractive condition is a substantial government interest that survives intermediate scrutiny. And that ordinance dealt with people sleeping and camping on the National Mall. Now, even people who were walking through the mall just and not stopping, those people might not necessarily be in violation of it, but the Supreme Court said that just because you might run into a situation where even people who are walking across might potentially cause damage or want to engage in speech, the fact that the ordinance does support trying to limit people sleeping and causing damage in that fashion makes it satisfy the elements of intermediate scrutiny. Your Honor, I see I'm getting close to my time. I would like to yield the 3 minutes to Mr. Peterson.
You've used the 3 minutes. Mr. Peterson can have 30 seconds.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'd just like to make two brief points. One is to emphasize the degree of the state's interest here. The state manages thousands of acres of public property and countless public buildings, and it has a distinct interest in being able to maintain reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on the use of government property.
But public squares are historically different than the park at Salt Fork. Public squares are where people go to exercise their First Amendment rights.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Historically.
Absolutely, Your Honor, but the essence of a time, place, and manner restriction is that it is a reasonable, content-neutral regulation of First Amendment activity, and that is the ability to regulate public forums such as Public Square or the State Capitol lawn. Those are the essence, that is the heart of a time, place, and manner restriction. And so the fact that it infringes upon First Amendment activity is irrelevant so long as it meets the other three standards. That is, does it advance a significant governmental interest? Is it narrowly tailored? And does it leave ample opportunity for communication?
Does it give them the opportunity to get their message out on the evening news?
It doesn't give them the opportunity to get the message out on the evening news. It gives them the opportunity to advance their message in a variety of ways, but the U.S. Supreme Court has never insisted that a speaker be given their chosen method of they are not entitled to their chosen method of getting their message across. Yes, they may not make it on the evening news, but they can certainly handbill, they can leaflet, they can apply for a permit, they can use one of the other quadrants of the square. And so the fact that they may be denied one forum for getting their message across doesn't mean that it infringes upon First Amendment.
Well, this is basically a curfew violation case, am I right?
It is the violation of curfew, and it is a violation of a permitting requirement. But most importantly, it's a violation of a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction.
Does the city regularly issue permits for the use of this quadrant?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And while my friend from the city of Cleveland could speak with more detail, they regularly issue permits for the usage of the park and for this quadrant.
Is 10-day notice reasonable?
Absolutely it is, Your Honor. And to the extent that there may be concerns about prior restraint, questions of prior restraint are only involved when you have content-based regulation. The U.S. Supreme Court has disclaimed any reliance on a prior restraint analysis when, like here, you have a content-neutral analysis.
So are you saying the 10 days doesn't matter because this is content-neutral?
Yes, Your Honor. That under the circumstances, because this is a content-neutral regulation, the 10-day application is reasonably calculated to serve the significant interests in public health, public safety, managing the public property, and preserving the park. And that's an interest the U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld, and we would ask this court to uphold and to reverse the 8th District's decision.
Well, counsel, we live in a very different world from even a couple of decades ago. Egypt, for example, what they call the flash mobs, people hear things on the news that get them agitated or concerned or want a place to go to show their unity for or against someone. 10 days doesn't seem like that would accommodate those needs at all.
Well, Your Honor, that may not accommodate their need or their desire to gather on this quadrant of public square, but they could take to the streets, they could take to the sidewalks, they can get their message out.
Well,
indeed,
But I was wondering about that as I read this. The briefs say, well, there's all these other places they could go. So this is about Wall Street and the housing crisis and all of that. Is it not? That's what their issue of the moment was. So what if they decided to go down and camp out in front of the Federal Reserve Building a block or two away? Would the police have allowed that to occur and to choke off the sidewalk there in front of the Fed?
Well, Your Honor, again, it would depend on what restrictions and if the restrictions
or one of the
place...
banks, one of the banks, to congregate in front of the entrance to a bank. Wouldn't they have encountered other problems?
Your Honor, they may or may not have, but that doesn't change the fact that when you have a regulation on usage of a park and it's content neutral, that does not run afoul of the First Amendment. The U.S. Supreme Court in Clark for Community for Creative Nonviolence, Ward v. Rock Against Racism, Thomas v. Chicago Park District, every time it is upheld on intermediate scrutiny grounds the exact type of regulation it here. And to the extent that you are concerned about alternative avenues of communication, I would direct you to the Contributor v. City of Brentwood. It's a Sixth Circuit case cited in the reply by the City of Cleveland. And it discusses exactly the type of showing and the very low burden on a municipality to establish alternative avenues of communication.
Let me ask you about Section 11 Article 1, the Ohio Constitution. Isn't that in play as well?
It's not, Your Honor.
Why?
At least for the very reason because they have not asked for it in this case.
Well, isn't it always there?
Well, to the
asked for or not.
To the extent that the court were to sua sponte raise the issue, I would say two things.
Well, that would be terrible if we sua sponte looked to the Ohio Constitution, wouldn't it?
Well, I would say that this would not be the case to do it when it has not been asked for, and even if the court was inclined to, it has already addressed
that issue. One of your predecessors stood in this hall, in this courtroom, Judge Sutton, and was critical of advocates for not first addressing the Ohio Constitution when there's both the Ohio Constitution and the federal Constitution in play.
Well,
so shouldn't we look at that?
Two answers. One, they haven't asked for it, so not in this case. And two, the court has already looked at it. If you look to the decisions in State v. Robinette and Eastwood Mall v. Slanko, it is already addressed and found that in this case, the Ohio Constitution is coextensive with the First Amendment. And so because the time, place, and manner restriction here is a run-of-the-mill park closure case that has been upheld repeatedly by the U.S. Supreme Court, the Eighth District's decision was an error and should be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Murray?
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I do rise on behalf of Aaron McArdle and Leatrice Tolles. Before I get into my main argument, I want to deal specifically with the question of spontaneous speech, because the U.S. Supreme Court in 2002 struck down the Village of Stratton, Ohio's licensing law that required everyone to go to the mayor to get a permit to do door-to-door canvassing. And one of the main reasons that it was struck down was that it prohibited spontaneous speech. And there was an ordinance, you could apply for it at any time, and the court said, yeah, but what if it's a weekend and you have a reason to go door-to-door proselytizing your religion or speaking on politics? And
would your clients have a right to spontaneous speech at midnight on public square using a microphone?
Yes.
That could be spontaneous.
Yes.
So you believe it would be a violation of their free speech rights to put that kind of a limitation on them?
You mean
them?
A a prohibition on sound amplification?
Well, even just spontaneous speech at midnight on public square.
Sure, that would be a violation of their First Amendment
rights.
Why
would it not be a reasonable time, place, and manner restriction to say you can't have spontaneous speech in the middle of downtown, given the hotels that are there? Why would that not be reasonable to put some kind of limitation on?
Well, because as Justice Pfeiffer pointed out, the public square in Cleveland is a quintessential place for free speech. For 150 years, there have been protests, rallies at all days and hours of the night until 2007 when this ordinance was adopted.
Was there evidence that there were protests at midnight?
You can take judicial notice. We listed some midnight vigils and that are reported in the newspapers and historically. There's a book by Mr. Orth that we pointed out in the brief. There's plenty of evidence throughout the years that rallies...
Do you know that those people didn't receive permits to do so?
They weren't required to get a permit until 2007, Your Honor.
Okay, but do you know... Subsequent to 2007, there were people who were allowed to have spontaneous candlelight vigils or whatever you want to describe on public square without a permit.
No, you need to get a permit.
Okay, you don't know that that happened. So the 2007 regulations apply to everybody.
Yes, it's
okay,
an outright.
What would happen if? You have this permitting process 10 days in advance, and on one, the permit is, I want to be on the public square, and there's two opposing groups, and by that I mean violently opposing groups. Would the state, here the city, be within their rights to limit access to both groups or to one group? Given the potential for violence and injury to person and property.
This ordinance doesn't further that interest because the same thing could happen during the daytime. As a matter of fact, more people are going to congregate in public square during the daytime. So if that's the substantial governmental interest that is supposed to be furthered by this ordinance,
No, I'm not saying it is. I'm asking you whether that would be a permissible activity by the government.
Yes, the government, the court in the Thomas versus Chicago board case, which laid out the framework of requiring the government to show a substantial governmental interest in a narrowly tailored way under a licensing scheme that doesn't confer broad discretion, that has strict time limits and provides judicial review. One of the bases for deciding who gets a permit is if you get two competing applications for a permit, and the Chicago ordinance only applied to gatherings of 50 or more people, not to a solitary person. One of the grounds that a permit could be denied is if a previous organization already applied for the same park. That would be a permissible ordinance.
If another group had applied for a permit, then your group could be moved off public square.
Under this ordinance, that is correct. But keep in mind.
And why would one group have to apply in order to occupy it, but your group didn't have to apply to occupy it?
Well,
What is the logical, rational basis for that analysis?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the Supreme Court has made it clear that a person faced with an unconstitutional licensing law may ignore it and engage with
I'm trying to get an answer to this question. You just told me that if someone applied for a permit and had the right to occupy that northwest quadrant of public square, your group could be moved off to accommodate the one who applied for the permit. Is that right?
Under a properly framed permit law that applied to public space.
I'm asking in this instance, if another group had done that, your group could be moved off to accommodate the group that obtained the permit to be
under
there.
This ordinance, yes. That is correct. Under this
and
ordinance.
And why does one group have to apply for a permit, but your group not have to apply for a permit to occupy that same space?
You don't have to apply for a permit during the other hours. And you could have competing groups. The public square has historically, that northwest quadrant is the Tom Johnson quadrant because the statue of Mayor Johnson sits there and inscribed on it is the very quadrant dedicated to freedom of speech.
And you don't think asking for a permit is a reasonable time, manner, place? Is that what your analysis
no.
is? No. It is reasonable.
Depends on the criteria. It's a prior restraint, and the Supreme Court has said it's a presumption against its constitutional validity unless it contains a number of features.
But this isn't content neutral, so how does it get, this is content neutral, so how does it get to be a prior restraint?
Because under Lakewood versus Plain Dealer, it was a content neutral ordinance. The mayor was given the option of given permits for newspaper racks. Supreme Court struck it down as unconstitutional because it conferred too much discretion. Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham.
Okay, well, this is not discretionary.
Yes, it is. If you look at the criteria, look at the reasons that the permits can be denied. The director can deny the permit if he finds that the proposed activity will unreasonably interfere with or detract from the promotion of public health, welfare, and safety. Compare that with the language in Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham, where the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the parade permitting ordinance because it conferred too much discretion.
Your argument would be stronger if you had applied and been denied, but you never even went and asked. You just went on and trespassed, if you would, on the property, and you were just there. And no one said anything until the curfew hour.
Your Honor, Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham, Lakewood versus Plain Dealer, and Lovell versus Griffin, since 1940, the U.S. Supreme Court has held that a person faced with an unconstitutional licensing law may ignore it and engage with impunity in the exercise.
Didn't they apply for one previously?
Pardon me?
Didn't this group apply and were granted one?
No,
a short period of time before.
No, here's what happened.
They didn't?
No. What happened was there's an ordinance that prohibits erecting a canopy on the public sidewalk. A group sought and got a permit to put a canopy on the sidewalk, not on the public square. Then what happened is...
Was that your group?
It was the Occupy Cleveland group.
Okay.
But yes, and so that had nothing to do with the public square or this ordinance. It was a completely separate ordinance that said if you wanted to put up a canopy on the sidewalk, you could ask for and get a permit. They did that. Now they went to the public square to have their protest and their rally. And under this ordinance, everyone is banned after 10 o'clock unless you have a permit. And they had no permit. They weren't required to get a permit under the Constitution because they were engaged in free speech. However, they didn't have a permit. They were arrested, and they were taken to jail, and then this case was spawned. After that, we filed a federal lawsuit seeking to have this same ordinance declared unconstitutional. The federal judge brokered a settlement whereby he got the city to agree in the future to give them permits for the Northwest Quadrant, so the federal court never had to reach the constitutional issue. But no, they never had a permit until after the federal litigation for the public square quadrant. They were there, they were arrested after 10 o'clock.
Mr. Murray, so that we can understand the thrust of your argument, at the very foundation of it, isn't it that when you look at the U.S. Supreme Court cases, permit or no permit is not where the inquiry begins. Is that basically correct?
Well, a public...
You argue it doesn't matter that they didn't apply for a permit, period.
Exactly. Exactly, because that's what happened to Reverend Shuttlesworth. He was convicted in Alabama, and the Supreme Court said conviction reversed, and it didn't matter that he didn't apply for a permit because the permitting license ordinance gave too much discretion and therefore was unconstitutional.
And that was worded like the Cleveland ordinance?
Yes. As I said, the standard there was that the permit would be denied if, in the judgment of the licensing official, the public welfare, peace, safety, health, decency, good order, morals, or convenience require that it be refused.
All right, that's a little broader than what the Cleveland ordinance says.
Well, let's compare it. If the director can deny it if he finds that the proposed use will unreasonably interfere with or detract from the promotion of public health, welfare and safety. Three of the same words right, used in
three
that.
Three of the same words, but he doesn't. They don't include morality and some of the other convenience and some of the other language that was in the ordinance that was struck down. It's substantially different wording.
But it's broad. There's plenty of discretion
but
there.
You have to agree it's a lot narrower than the ordinance you're referring to.
I don't think it's much narrower at all, Your Honor. Other than the fact that it didn't have morals and convenience, but...
Well, that's a pretty big loophole, morals and convenience. You can drive all kinds of trucks through that to get where you want to be if you're the city.
Well, I think...
We don't have any restrictions on morals or convenience.
But all he's got to say is, I don't think it'll promote the public health, welfare, or safety. That is very ambiguous and unbridled. And it gets worse because if you look at the appendix to the city's reply brief, they attach the form that one has to fill out and the rules that one has to abide by, and that says that the director can deny the permit if he doesn't think that the use would be in the best public interest. So it's even broader in the application.
You're attacking the discretion of the permitting officer.
Yes, sir.
You're not suggesting this is a content-based restriction, are you?
Well, the second one is, when you get to B, the first one isn't, but the second one says he can deny it if the proposed activity or use is reasonably anticipated to incite violence, crime, or disorderly conduct. That requires him to consider the content of the protest to determine whether there's going to be other people there who would become disorderly or engage in violence or be hostile to the message that my group is communicating.
You think that language in B is a content-based restriction?
Yes.
So that's one of the issues you want us to address.
Exactly. And I would cite the Supreme Court's decision in the Forsyth County case, because there the Supreme Court struck down again a permitting licensing law that permitted the licensing official to vary the cost of the permit based upon how much police activity they would need to have in order to...
That's not here.
Keep the peace. Well, the Supreme Court said that requirement would entitle the decision maker to consider the reaction of the crowd and the listener's reaction to the protest at issue there, and therefore, once the licensing decision maker could consider the listener's reaction, that made it a content-based provision that was unconstitutional even under...
So ordinary crowd control... You would find that the city having to take into consideration crowd control issues would be problematic.
The problem is that this ordinance doesn't. No, crowd control, generally speaking, is a
permissible city interest.
Having an idea as to how many people are going to be present at an event is certainly a worthwhile endeavor. The problem is this isn't an ordinance that furthers that substantial governmental interest because a single person can violate it. If I go home to my office tonight on Public Square and I work late and I walk through Public Square after 10 o'clock and I stop to ponder how my argument went today, I've committed a crime in the city of Cleveland. This is so overbroad. I mean,
can't you be on the walkway coming through there?
That's the other problem. You can walk through it with impunity.
Right.
So 1,000 people can walk through.
And your clients could have just removed themselves to the sidewalk and there wouldn't be a problem.
Well, except that as long ago as 1939, Your Honor, the U.S. Supreme Court in Schneider versus State, where the same plea was offered, it was a ban on leafleting in the streets, and the city said, well, you can go to all the other public places in the city and therefore it's okay. And the Supreme Court said one is not to have the exercise of his liberty of expression in appropriate places abridged on the plea that it may be exercised in some other place. The point is...
Inappropriate places, and that's the crux here. Is it appropriate for the city to regulate the space of that quadrant between the hours of 10 p.m. and 5 p.m. and require a permit if you want to be there?
Only if it advances a substantial governmental interest, and it's done in a narrowly tailored way.
But isn't there a substantial governmental interest here? You'd concede that.
No, because it doesn't...
You think there's none.
Well, let me reframe that. It doesn't further any substantial governmental interest because it's so under-inclusive. For example, name any governmental interest they assert And the same interest applies during the daytime when there are more people on public square. And yet this ordinance doesn't require anybody to obtain a license. You can have five groups competing to be on public square throughout the day. So how does the curfew ordinance further that substantial governmental
interest?
Isn't
it arguing underclusivity and
yes.
overbreadth at the same time?
And in fact, that's they're two sides of the same coin. And,
Council, isn't what we're looking for a connection between whatever the governmental interest is in the regulation? So, for example, after 10 o'clock, you wouldn't have city services available. You wouldn't have the same ability for the city to respond. So in that instance, don't we have a connection between what happens after 10 p.m. and what happens, say, for example, in your example, during business hours?
Well, first of all, there's nothing in the record to that effect. But beyond that, the ordinance is under-inclusive because 1,000 people can walk through public square back and forth after 10 p.m., but two people can't stand there watching them for more than 30 seconds. And therefore, it doesn't further that substantial. You see, under the Supreme Court's...
Well, there's no restrictions at all on the activity that can transpire during the day on public square.
That's correct.
No restrictions whatsoever. Someone
well, other,
could use
other
it
than
for an
general
outdoor
crim-
bathroom. Somebody could... start tearing up the grass. Somebody could, there's no restrictions. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say that, Chief Justice. What I said was this ordinance, which is the only thing that matters here, doesn't regulate any activity during the daytime hours.
Well, no, it doesn't, but there are ordinances that would apply to people's behavior, both daytime and
sure,
nighttime.
Of course.
An inappropriate, illegal, behavior that would jeopardize the public health and safety are permissible, no matter what time of day or night.
Yeah, under general criminal laws. No one's challenging general criminal laws. We're challenging only this ordinance, which applies only after 10 p.m. and places no restrictions prior to 10 p.m. and is not narrowly tailored and doesn't further the substantial governmental interests that the city claims that it furthers. Because, as Justice Scalia pointed out in the Brown versus Entertainment Merchant case just a couple of years ago, under-inclusiveness of a regulation, in that case it was of violent video games, but they left out regulating cartoons, and Justice Scalia says, well, when you are under-inclusive, it casts doubt on the legitimacy of the substantial governmental interest.
Your clients have a big group of bystanders there watching what they were doing?
I don't think there was.
Okay. Who were they talking to? Who were they exercising their right for free speech to at that hour? You know, we're close to, what, about 11 p.m. when they're being ousted, you know, from that spot. And, you know, if you're talking about free speech, I mean, your clients wanted to be arrested. Is that true?
I don't know. It's not in the record, but they allowed themselves to be arrested. There's
okay,
no question about
that. Okay, they wanted
to
be because they obviously didn't comply with the directives of the officers. And
neither did Reverend Shuttlesworth.
Okay, but...
Neither did...
well, we're talking about the Cleveland
yes.
ordinance here, but there was nobody there to listen to them exercising their free speech.
Oh, I don't agree with that. There were people that were available to listen, and they were, and that isn't. You don't have to always have an audience in order to exercise your.
How many
your
people
first,
were here doing this?
Again, the record is unclear, but I think there may have been 100 or 150 people. So they were giving speeches, and they were communicating their message to the assembled group, and they were exercising First Amendment rights. And even if nobody wanted to pay attention to it, Chief Justice O'Connor, I can give a speech and maybe I'm not going to make a difference and maybe nobody's going to like what I say and maybe nobody even wants to listen to it, but I still have a First Amendment right to say it.
Counsel, it strikes me there's an irony in play here. I don't know whether your clients were just mimicking what was going on in Occupy Wall Street or whether they were more sophisticated. The irony that strikes me is here is an ordinance of the Cleveland City Council same counsel that saw the housing, the subprime loans, and what it was doing to their community, and tried to regulate it, and they couldn't because the state legislature had said one size fits all. So Cleveland was really, Cleveland and Las Vegas and a few other places, was ground zero for the fallout from what happened on Wall Street.
Yes.
So in a way, it was a logical place to have a demonstration. I don't know that your clients even made that connection, or whether they just watched on television the folks in New York occupying a park and thought it would be good sport to go do the same thing.
No, Your
it
Honor,
doesn't it, matter, does it?
It doesn't matter, but they believed in what they were doing, Your Honor, and this group was committed to protesting what they viewed as economic inequality, and they had a right to do so, and they were peaceful, and they were exercising First Amendment rights in a place that for 150 years was exactly where, in public square in Cleveland, one goes to give that kind of speech and to exercise those rights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Chief Justice. In regards to whether or not this ordinance is narrowly tailored, I would like to address the difference between daytime and nighttime. Just because the ordinance is not in effect during the day doesn't mean that the city is not able to in some way protect the same interest during the day. The main difference is that during the day, when tens of thousands, if not more, citizens are downtown working and commuting, there's a massive police presence downtown in and around public square. They are there to ensure that the city's substantial government interests are protected, the same ones that the ordinance tries to protect. The difference at night is that the police officers have to go out into the communities, to the residential neighborhoods, to do what they have to do out there. The city has limited resources and cannot afford to put a police officer on public square 24 hours a day to make sure that it's safe. Thank you, Your Honor.
Gentlemen, we'll take the matter under advisement and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you very much. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.